Episode 19 of the Thinking Heights podcast. I'm Simon. I'm here with Pam.
Hello.
Hello. And we are here to record an episode about mindfulness this week. Mindfulness and yoga and all the things in that Venn diagram that all cross together. It's a subject that I've been meaning to do something about for weeks and weeks and weeks, but I don't know. I kind of kept pushing it down the list because everybody talks about mindfulness is very much in the news and in the zeitgeist quite a lot at the moment, and I thought maybe we could talk about other things first. But it's still, you know, it's still something I've really wanted to talk about because it's something that I realised, again, reflecting on things, that I still use most days, if not every day. So to talk about mindfulness, I think we both do mindfulness, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, you probably more than me, but it's something that I've learned from you when you did your practitioner course.
Yeah.
And it's something that I can definitely see the benefits of. It's more tied in with yoga for me.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
So mindfulness, Professor Mark Williams, former director of the Oxford Mindfulness Centre, says that mindfulness means knowing directly what is going on inside and outside ourselves moment by moment. That seems a bit of a glib statement. I mean, I know what's going on around me all the time. But the problem is that an anxious mind, as it's so often referred to in mindfulness literature, the monkey mind, I am forever projecting far off into the future, reflecting far off into the past, and either judging myself for things that have happened or catastrophizing about things that may or may not or probably won't happen in the future. So the actual time spent in the middle between those, right now, right here, on this at this moment, is comparatively slim. You know, when you go to work, you're planning for meetings, you're planning for lunch, you're planning for your journey on the way home, you're planning for I need to get to bed before a certain time. Certainly when I used to work in Sheffield, I'd be planning the way through to bedtime because I know I need to be up the next day, and it's only 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I'm not mindful, you know, and I'd have to remind myself of that.
Yeah. Working out what time you needed to be asleep by
to get your exact amount of sleep, which never works. Yeah. Never ever works. So mindfulness is about that pendulum, trying to keep the pendulum in the middle. So an important part of mindfulness, as Mark Williams says, is reconnecting with our bodies and the sensations that they experience. This means waking up to the sights, sounds, smells, tastes of the present moment. That might be something as simple as the feel of a banister as we walk up the stairs. That's kind of getting a bit deeper into sort of the mindfulness theory. But the point is that mindfulness exercises, the meditations and the body scans and things like that, are designed to focus you on being very localized and very present, because if you start reflecting on what you're doing and how you're doing it with what they call present time awareness, everything else just starts to fall away. It's not gone, because that's not the point. It's just that one of the things that I learned in the practitioner course, the mindfulness practitioner course that I did, was the events don't change, it's the reaction, your reaction to those events that change. And that can be an incredibly powerful tool, especially if you're working in a high stress, high energy environment. You know, if it's time critical, or when I used to work in the prison, I found mindfulness did help me go back in and maintain a level of personal well-being and safety that I had otherwise struggled to attain.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the body scan, and the basic body scan that I've certainly found useful if I can't sleep. I've mentioned in a previous podcast about trouble sleeping, and the next best thing is relaxation with my eyes closed, and the basic body scan, which is quite often used as a sort of cool down in yoga,
yeah,
where you work your way up your body. So you start with, I'm relaxing my feet are relaxed. Mm. I'm relaxing my ankles are relaxed. And you work your way through your body, and you work your way up to the top of your head and then over to the spot between your eyes, sometimes called the third eye, the spot between your eyebrows. And it's very much suggestion to yourself, but it calms your mind and it calms your breath. And once you, I think sometimes you can reflect back on that. If you're in a stressful situation, sometimes just stopping and taking five deep breaths through your nose will it calms your heart rate and it'll calm your mind a little bit, because you focus on your breathing and it just gives you a little bit of distance from, like you say, it doesn't take things away, but it does refocus you and you just kind of go back to it. And it's almost like you've taken a time out away from it.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things, talking about the five mindful breaths. It's been clinically proven in multiple studies that mindfulness, help as little as five mindful breaths, can help slow your heart rate, reduce blood pressure, reduce stress, reduce anxiety, improve sleep. And it's incredibly powerful, and it's free, because all it is your brain and your lungs at the end of the day. That's all. You don't need a yoga mat, you don't need a set of trainers, you don't need to go to the gym. I use mindfulness everywhere, really. I mean, I sometimes, you know, on the shuttle bus in between meetings in Sheffield, that's a perfect time just to have 2 minutes, just having a few mindful breaths. You don't have to shut your eyes, you don't have to sit in the lotus position and, you know, put your arms out or anything. It's just about being mindful of where you are. I'm sat on the bus, my feet are on the ground, my hands are on my lap, I'm taking five breaths in and five breaths out, and that's enough. And that's enough. And it doesn't have to be a big rigmarole. It doesn't have to be a huge, drawn out, long process. But the history of mindfulness, really, one of the early pioneers are people like Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese monk. And he talks a lot about present time and present moment awareness. He has a retreat in France called, I think it's Plum Tree Village, where people go for mindfulness retreats. And he's been on well recently, but he's doing okay. He's quite an elderly gentleman at the moment, but he's been espousing mindfulness and the mindful engaged Buddhism for many, many years. And then you've got people like Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's been around since he was born in 1944. He's been around. He's a biologist by trade, but he's been around since the 90s, when he released a book called Full Catastrophe Living, which takes the mindful portion of Buddhism, but takes the Buddhism out of it and makes it more secular and makes it more approachable to people who maybe have been put off by the quasi-religious aspect of mindfulness otherwise. And, you know, let's not exclude all of the religions. There are meditative practices in all religions. So, it's one of those things that does, you know, self-reflection and self-awareness is religious as well as it is secular. But mindfulness particularly has removed everything from that, really, and just focuses on the present time awareness. So Jon Kabat-Zinn coined mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR, and then his first book was Full Catastrophe Living, Using the Wisdom of Your Body and Mind to Face Stress, Pain and Illness. And that really started sort of generating that thought that, you know, you can control the way... Pain doesn't go away, necessarily, but you can control the way your body and your mind react to pain. Stress doesn't go away, but you can control the way your mind reacts to stress. And that's a very powerful tool to have, because pain and stress and worry and things can escalate to a point where they're unsurmountable.
Yeah, and I think it's very important to be able to... I think mindfulness can help you train your brain to compartmentalise that aspect. So whether it's your stresses or your pain, physical pain, emotional pain, it can help you to sort of put that in a box. So like you say, it doesn't go away, but you can almost be a step removed from it.
I personally don't. I mean, a lot of people have their own metaphors for what happens with their mindful practice. I don't personally see it as putting it in a box. But that's only because the training that I had involved different metaphors. Yeah. That's all. The metaphor that was most commonly used was that you're on the bank of a river, And the river is your thoughts. Uh-huh. So there's, scientists, in inverted commas, say that you have between 60,000 and 70,000 thoughts a day. Not sure how they got to that number, but it seems a little low to me. But
yeah.
So there's 60,000 or 70,000 thoughts flowing along in the river, and it's all too easy to jump in and try and catch them all.
Mm.
But what you should be doing is just watching them go past. Yeah. And occasionally maybe dipping your toe in, but the whole point is that those thoughts will go. Those thoughts are transient. They're never really permanent unless you make them permanent.
Yeah.
So putting your hand in and grabbing one takes it out of that thought river, mm-hmm. and makes it more permanent. But observing that thought, I'm in pain. Okay. Well, yes, I am in pain. And then, it doesn't make the thought go away. It's still there. It's still in your thought river, but you're not attaching the attention or the importance to it as you would. Treat it like any other thought, like, oh, the mail's arrived, or oh, I'm tying my shoelaces, or oh, I need to indicate to turn left. Although a lot of the drivers, incidentally, didn't do that this morning when I was on my way to the meeting I was attending. I was merging. This is a complete aside, but I was merging into a slip road, off a slip road, and a van came past me on the right hand side, and the driver had a phone in one hand, a cigarette in the other, and he crossed four lanes of traffic in one go, just thump, right across.
Wow.
And I've never seen an entire four lane motorway just grind to a halt because of one person before. It was just, that wasn't a very mindful driving, let's say. But yeah, anyway, I digress. But research by Jon Kabat-Zinn talks about the effects of MBSR on things like psoriasis, pain, anxiety, brain function and immune function. It seems odd that psoriasis could be affected by mindfulness, but evidence suggests that psoriasis flare-ups are caused by stress. Stress causes anxiety flare-ups. You reduce the stress, you reduce the likelihood of a flare-up of psoriasis.
Yeah.
I find that my sleep is affected by stress. I reduce my stress by mindfulness. I sleep better.
Yeah. There's a lot of sort of autoimmune conditions that are exacerbated by stress.
Mm.
So it makes sense that reducing your stress levels would improve your physical health or reduce flare-ups.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Or at the very least reduce the severity of any flare-ups. I get eczema. I'm much more likely to react. My skin's much more likely to react to things like different washing powders and soaps and washing up liquids and things. I'll react much more violently if I'm in a period of high stress.
Mm.
Whereas I might, sometimes it might just be a small reaction that lasts a day or two.
Yeah.
But if I'm stressed, then I'll react to everything. I mean, I've had allergic reactions to micropore plaster, which the whole point of that being developed was because it was a hypoallergenic sticking plaster.
Yeah.
I have had
because stress affects
most of the time I'm fine with it.
Yeah, because stress affects your hormones. Hormones affect, your histamines and all that and all that stuff. So if you can keep that under control by maintaining a mindful present moment approach to it, which leads on to the caveat, really, that mindfulness isn't a panacea. You're not going to cure everything with mindfulness. You're not going to prevent everything with mindfulness, but mindfulness is a very useful tool to have in your locker, just to be it's a check-in, it's a mental check-in, it's a mental reminder to be aware of what's going on. And that's how I like to think of it. It's just like not having meds on their own, for mental health issues. Meds and talk to somebody. Meds and mindfulness. Meds and exercise. Make sure that you've got a suite of things that are going to work for you.
Yeah. A lot of, I'm talking about yoga. A lot of what you were saying about the about mindfulness and like watching the metaphor of a river of your thoughts and watching them. The yoga class that I go to is focuses a lot on the meditation side. I know there's a lot of yoga classes that just focus much more on the physical side of it, the postures, and it's about getting as good as you can at those. The class I go to focuses much more on, I'd say it's probably more of a spiritual yoga class, because it focuses much more on the meditation side of it.
Yeah, it's Sivananda yoga as opposed to, what's the hot yoga?
Bikram.
Bikram and other ones.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different varieties of yoga.
Yeah.
But the metaphor used in the yoga that I go to is, like when you're doing the postures, it's just your body doing the postures. The body's just a vessel for yourself. It's not your and you, it's a vessel for your mind and your consciousness. So you observe your body doing it. So when you stood in mountain posture, which is stood up straight with your hands in prayer mudra, so your hands together in front of you, stood straight, feet pushing into the floor, imagine a string through the crown of your head lifting you upwards, eyes closed, and you just observe yourself stood there. And that can be quite meditative. It seems
I used to find that really meditative.
Intuitively it doesn't seem like it would be a meditative position, because you stood up straight with your hands together in front of you. But it is a very meditative.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why I found it meditative was, one, because I don't normally stand up straight.
Yeah.
And two, I found it more so because we used to go to yoga together, and then I stopped for a bit to go to martial arts. But you'd go in and you'd start your sun salutation, the 8 moves.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to go into. But then after doing that for a bit, the first 20 minutes, half an hour, and then you finish in mountain pose. That's when the movements have loosened you up, and you're a bit more, you know, in the flow of everything. And then I've genuinely felt, I always feel at least, you know, a couple of inches taller, I feel more stable, and I feel more, which is really good for me, because being slightly wonky, I always felt like I was wobbling, and I'd be conscious of that, you know, and it's very hard to be mindful when you think you're going to fall over.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the aspects, one of the symptoms I get with MS is poor balance. And incidentally, one of the tests that, before brain scanning was really a thing, one of the tests that they used to use to diagnose MS, and they still do use to get a guide, is you'd stand up straight with your eyes closed, and they'd see how much you
wobbled around.
You wobbled around.
Oh, like the American sobriety test.
I don't know.
Yeah,
is that
what they do, yeah.
But it does not... I can feel myself wobbling when I do it, because it's you stand up and I get, okay, I'm balanced now. And then he says, close your eyes. And I can feel myself moving. And it's basically, you know, your body makes the adjustments to keep you upright. But I do notice that at the end of the cycle of sun salutations... I'm much more balanced. I find it much easier to balance, because we'll quite often finish it where we'll hold that for 5 breaths. It does make a difference going from the start to the finish.
But the breathing and breathing in mindfulness and breathing in yoga is kind of interchangeable. It's the same sort of stuff. It's about centering yourself, isn't it?
Yeah. Just being yourself. The Sivananda yoga, you always start with a meditation, and that you'll be lying down for that.
I have snored through that so many times.
There's a lady next to me. Yes, I remember before I went yesterday, I said, I hope I don't fall asleep. I'm really tired. But the lady next to me did fall asleep, and she was actually snoring all the way through it. It's I've achieved it a few times, but it's called yoga nidra, and it's the kind of threshold between sleeping and waking, and it's very difficult to describe. But when you actually achieve it, and you can, the aim is to be able to hold that, because normally it's that feeling just as you're falling asleep, but you're still conscious. Obviously, that normally doesn't last very long, because you're falling asleep and then you're asleep. But being able to maintain that is the aim of that meditation?
When I was hardcore into like meditation and yoga and stuff, it always used to be coloured silver for me.
Oh, right. Okay.
Not that I was like in a silver blanket or anything. It just in my head,
yeah.
Everything is silver.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's weird.
Doesn't it?
But yeah, no. It. I miss doing the yoga, but I do prefer the more the combative, the martial arts bit. But I do try and do, you know, if I'm stretching, if I'm warming up,
yeah,
before martial art, the stretches are,
yeah,
the stretches are yoga stretches, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean it's certainly the class I go to, the focus is on getting the breathing right, because obviously if you're trying to do the stretches when you're holding your breath,
yeah,
that's bad for you because you'll increase your blood pressure, which is not what you're aiming for at all.
Mm.
But the some of the poses you can feel the benefit that you're getting from it physically, mm, as well as the relaxation and centering your mind and settling,
mm,
your mind. But talking a bit about like the origins of yoga and,
yeah,
mindfulness, I suppose it does draw a lot on the meditation side of yoga. Mm.
Well, the Eastern philosophies around, yeah, that time really, really kind of all came from that era, didn't they?
Well, it's yoga, according to Wikipedia,
so the font of all knowledge.
Well, yes, yoga is a group of physical, mental, and spiritual practices or disciplines which are originated in ancient India, and yoga is one of the six orthodox schools of Hindu philosophical traditions. There's a broad variety of yoga schools, practices and goals in Hinduism, Buddhism and Jainism. Yeah. Among the best known types of yoga are Hatha yoga and Raja yoga. Mm. Goes into an awful lot, and everything will kind of fill into all of those. Sivananda yoga is a form of Hatha yoga,
mm-hmm,
but it focuses on proper breathing called pranayama.
Mm-hmm.
Prana is the sort of life breath,
mm-hmm,
and very I think it's very important across all branches of yoga and Buddhism. Positive thinking, meditation, relaxation. According to this, you're supposed to, the diet is vegetarian, but I've never heard that.
I mean, all retreats are.
Yes, certainly. Yeah. But I'd assumed that was more like...
We go to yoga in Chorlton. I think there's a lot of vegetarians.
Yeah. But I found it really helpful to me, and it's, you know, again, I think it's something, it's not for everyone. Some people don't get on with something like yoga at all. That, mm, certainly as a physical exercise, they don't see it as physical. I always feel like I've had a proper workout when I've come out of a class.
Yeah, it's interesting because people seem to see it as very, very passive.
Yeah.
And it is to a certain extent, but you don't... I remember the first time we went to an advanced yoga class with Mick Timpson is the teacher we go to. He runs a company called
Yoga Life Manchester.
Yoga Life Manchester. That's right.
Put a link.
We'll put some links up. He's brill. He's an architect by trade, but his personal passion is yoga, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's just one of the most effortlessly chill human beings I've ever met. But we finished that first. Do you remember we finished that first advanced yoga class that time?
Yeah.
And next day I could hardly move.
Yeah.
I just highlighted how unfit we were.
But yeah.
But we went that often that I still remember. You know, I think I could still chuck out a salute to the sun without too much.
Without having to revise.
Yeah. Without having to look at the little picture I've got on the fridge.
Yeah. Yeah, the salute to the sun, that can be a really good... If you're short on time, you know, you can go through a couple of cycles of that.
Yeah.
And it is a full-body warm-up and a full-body workout, really. Especially if you hold some of the postures rather than just doing it as a whole.
What do they call a vinyasa flow? Or whatever
There's
so many names.
I couldn't remember that. Mm. There's also, I found when I was doing a bit of research, the NHS website, the NHS at the exercise section has got a really good page on yoga and how, you know, who it's good for, basically saying it's good for everyone.
Mm.
It can help with preventing falls because obviously you're building up your strength, your core strength is really important.
Yeah.
And it highlights to me that that's something that
you need to work on.
I need to work on, but it's.
But then at the same time, my mum's in uses a wheelchair, and she does seated yoga, so it's adaptable for everyone.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's about using the muscles that work and stretching those muscles.
When I was going to the neurophysio course that I had, there was a lady with MS. She went to a speciality. MS, a yoga class that was specifically for people with MS, and that was all lying down. So you do the same poses, same postures. So like the mountain posture, you'd hold yourself straight as if you'd be lying on your back instead.
That's clever.
And so you were getting all the same, working all the same muscles, but without having to stand up, because obviously, a big problem. I mean, I get a bit wobbly sometimes, but.
Mm.
She walked with a walker, and there were some people who were in wheelchairs. So she said there's some people in her class who were in wheelchairs. So, for them being able to do that,
it's all about
benefit from it.
It's like your MS nurse said, it's all about making hay when the sun shines, isn't it? It's about strengthening the muscles that are working well to the best of their ability. Because if you do have a relapse, then the muscle tone that you've got will help you through that relapse quicker, and that's really important. You know, and it certainly works for you. I mean, your last relapse didn't last as long as the one you had before. So.
No, I find that there's things like it helps you sort of mitigate problems. So it shows you how to compensate for things like falling over class, I called it. Because there was one session where we literally spent, this is... the neurophysio, in yoga, learning how to
falling over yoga. Yeah.
Learning, well, no, that's just when I overbalance.
Yeah.
I have done falling over yoga accidentally. Learning how to, so I suppose it's learning how, like in martial arts, you learn how to fall safely.
Yeah.
But it was
I find that really hard.
It's how to correct if you do lose your balance.
Yeah.
How to correct it, and it was. Doing it in a place where we had something to grab onto. So,
windmilling and grabbing the tablecloth, that kind of thing.
Brilliant. But basically putting your other foot down in time.
Ah, right, okay.
Which sounds like it's a no-brainer, but...
If you're neurologically, you know, if you're neurologically impaired by, you know, if the particular misfirings with MS and the lesions are in the place that mean that your gait is... impaired anyway, putting one foot down in time to stop yourself from falling over, you may be physically strong, but that particular piece of motor coordination might be the one thing that's lacking, so it could be really, really difficult, couldn't it?
So it's kind of forcing your brain to learn that pathway, so it's doing it over and over again, so your brain makes that pathway. And I suppose it's a similar thing to using mindfulness and meditation techniques to form new pathways for intrusive thoughts or bad habits and anxiety.
Well, they say it takes 21 days to make a new habit, apparently.
Okay. Yeah.
Normally you start seeing some benefit from meditation, longer term benefits, after about 21 days.
Right, okay.
So although you're not supposed to say... it was a good meditation or a bad meditation. There's no such thing. It's just a meditation. And the good thing about mindfulness and the good thing about yoga is and other, you know, self-help and self-enriching activities is you don't have to necessarily go to a class. You don't have to go into town to do it. You don't have to buy anything. incredibly expensive. YouTube has hundreds of thousands of meditations on there, ranging from 5-minute quick meditations to 2 hours of guided, you know, transcendental stuff. You know, it's really whatever you're into.
And there's loads of apps as well.
Yeah, I was just about to say there's loads of apps. Go on, you go.
Yeah, no, so there's loads of apps. There's one in particular that I just can't remember the name of.
Headspace.
No, there's Headspace is a good one, but there's one that I've got. And
well, while you're finding that, I'll go into Headspace a bit. Headspace is an app that appears on your on Google Apps and on Apple and whatnot, written by Andy Puddicombe, who, alongside Shamash Aladina, who I did my practitioner training with, are two kind of very well-known mindfulness practitioners and teachers in the UK. Headspace with Andy's is he's been on a lot of mainstream media. All it takes is 5 mindful minutes, and he does a TED talk about present time awareness and mindfulness. Quite well known. It's a good app, actually. I quite like it, although because I'd already done a lot of mindfulness before I downloaded the app, I already had a routine, so I didn't really necessarily need the app to fulfil that routine. But I know a lot of people who swear by it. But like I say, there's so many apps. There's different strokes for different phones.
Yeah, well, there's also people who say that with things like Headspace and these, when it's annoying when it tells you to meditate, because obviously all these apps do want a reminder.
Yeah.
It's like you're weighing things on your fitness app. And I suppose if someone's telling you, right, it's time to meditate.
Yeah, yeah, and then people can rail against that, can't they? So,
the app I found it now. It's called Let's Meditate, and there's a few different, there's lots of different meditations that you can download, guided meditations that you can download. So there's a 15-minute body scan, that's just a relaxation. And then there's all different. There's a deep relaxation, dream meditation, and then there's things like emotional release and empowerment. So there's all kinds of things that will be more focused on particular issues that you might have. Whereas you've got your body scan and everything, but
I mean it's quite a tight Venn diagram, that, though, isn't it? The mindfulness is the centre of it.
Yeah,
it's normally just the words in the guidance that address the issue in question, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of the things I'm going to do at the end of the podcast is actually from when I did my practitioner training, we had to record our own meditation as part of the course, and I still have that somewhere. So I'm going to actually put that on at the end. There'll be a little break at the end of the episode, and then it'll go into a 5-minute meditation. So that'll be fun for you, won't it? Feedback gratefully received on that. It was a couple of years ago, so I probably sound a bit younger. So, mindfulness and yoga and these kind of activities, for me, I found that obviously medication works for me. I've had this conversation a few times on the podcast. Medication works for me, and it works for me very well. But what really underpins it for me is exercise, which I've also talked about, and mindfulness practice, being mindful, being aware. And it's certainly the anxiety component of my issues that are definitely helped by mindfulness.
Yeah.
It's the medication and. And the exercise certainly helped with my mood. Mindfulness very much addresses my anxiety. I find it very, very beneficial. But that's not to say that I sit down on a cushion every day and meditate. I try and do something mindful every day. If it's running, I'm going for a run, well, a jog later, if I can. Or if it's something like the washing up, or hanging out the laundry, or origami. My origami is my mindfulness exercise, because you have to be focused, you have to be present moment aware, because if you're not, it doesn't come out right.
No.
So you have to be aware of the present moment, and it's a very centering,
because it's so precise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for you, like something like your cross stitch that you're working on,
yeah,
that's quite mindful.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not, you know, it doesn't have to be a setting aside a time to be mindful. You should, the idea is that you should be mindful all day, every day, you know, yeah. And it should be a subconscious thing. It should be something that's innate. So if you can pick a tiny thing and just, you don't have to change how you do it. You just have to be aware that you are being mindful while you're doing it. So this is me doing my cross stitch, this is me doing my origami, this is me but focusing on my breathing,
yeah,
and just do the same things that you do.
Well, it's the same thing when you do a guided meditation. The advice is always to carry that feeling with you, that centeredness. And you know, it's not always the easiest thing to do.
No,
you know, you mind if, but they also say if your mind wanders, let it,
yeah,
but don't, you know, just guide it back.
Guide it back, don't pull it back. Yeah, yeah. Just, that's the idea. Yeah. Because your mind is going to go all over the place.
Yeah,
I've used the filing cabinet metaphor a few times on the podcast. Where, you know, my at least four or five of my filing drawers are open at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get to. It's very rare that I get to a position where all the drawers are shut and the doors closed and the lights are off. It just doesn't.
Mm.
It doesn't work that way. So it's about me being able to embrace that.
Yeah.
Which I found very difficult. So the exercise and my coping mechanisms help me maintain that equilibrium, and that's really important.
Yeah. Is it Dreamcatcher, a film where one of the characters has got his internal library, his mind library?
I think so. That's a Stephen King book that was translated poorly to film, I think.
It was all right, but yeah.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
Damien Lewis was okay as the protagonist, yes. The evil protagonist.
He has a mind office. It's full of filing cabinets and boxes.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah.
That does ring a bell. Although, is that not Insomnia?
No, I'm sure.
I'm thinking of the guy that lives underground. That's Insomnia, isn't it? There's a guy that lives underground. Or is that The Hobbit? I don't know.
We've gone off topic a little bit.
But yeah, those kind of things. It's really helped me find a different equilibrium, find a different way of dealing with things, which is useful. It's always good to have more than one coping mechanism at your disposal, because not everything works every day. Not everything works for everybody all of the time. So if, you know, if I feel, oh, I'm just feeling a bit wound up, you know, I'll go for a walk, or I'll go and do some origami, or I'll go and do a mindfulness exercise, or I'll go and do this, that and the other. It might not, what works today might not work tomorrow.
No.
I mean, what I've found recently, obviously I've been at home a lot more in the last few weeks, because as a self-employed, I'm between contracts at the moment, and so when I've been getting a little bit stir crazy because I'm not used to being at home all day. So when I start feeling a bit stir crazy, I've been going out for a walk or a jog, or, you know, just a change of scenery, because
blow the cobwebs away.
Yeah, and that really is it, because when you get a bit stir crazy, it does feel like, it feels like everything's really big and really small at the same time. Certainly does for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So a change of scenery, you're mindfully putting yourself somewhere else, and that's quite nice, and I've really enjoyed that. But yeah, I couldn't. It's not, like you said, it's not for everybody, but I personally couldn't recommend mindfulness highly enough. I found mindfulness and counselling the two most effective things I've ever done for my mood and mental health.
I mentioned counselling in one of the earlier podcasts, because
that was the tightest segue I have ever done. from counselling to your counselling.
Yes. So I mentioned that I'd been referred, so I've had my telephone session, which was basically to get some more detail about the issues that had brought me to counselling, and or to further talking therapy, which is the kind of umbrella term for all the therapies that there are available. and to look at what would be the best next step for me. So I had a fairly long telephone call, so it was about a telephone conversation about 40 minutes, and went through the questionnaires that I'd done. So there's the PHQ-9, which relates to depression, and the GAD-7, which relates to anxiety.
Yeah.
Been through those
which
in more detail.
Yeah,
we talked about those. So talked through those, and then into more detail on specific issues. So decided at this point that counselling would be more suited for me to talk things through. And to be quite honest, I felt better after just that first conversation. And I think, reflecting on it, I think it was having a completely neutral person say that, agree with me that there were things that I was sort of struggling to get past and things that I needed to talk out. And it was quite reassuring to, because there was still a part of me that thought that I was either going to be told, as well, you know, people have it much worse and pull yourself together, or that, well, I don't think there's anything we can, you know, yeah, that's awful, but I don't think there's anything we can
either,
do about it.
You're either not mad enough or too mad.
Well, not too mad, but it's just like, well, yeah, that was awful, but, you know, there's nothing we can do about it now, so just get on with it.
It's really weird, you know, as a nurse, I've heard that hundreds of times, and I have this rote thing that I used to say to people, that you've got to remember that your problems may not be their problems, but they don't make your problems any less valid.
Yeah.
But then we've had this conversation between us many times where you know it, but then, you know, if you're struggling with your own self-worth and self-image, that's your first port of call, is where do I fit on the spectrum against somebody else?
Yeah. You know? So there is a bit of a waiting list, unfortunately. The lady that I spoke to said that I would have the option at the end of the counselling sessions, and it's like six sessions or something, I would have the option to attend some CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy sessions as well, if that would be beneficial.
Yeah.
But she thinks it would definitely be more beneficial at this stage to do the counselling first, which is good, because that was what I was hoping for before I went into the call. There's a waiting list of about 6 to 8 weeks, but, you know, it's not going to cost
You're on the road.
I mean, you know, I've got the referrals in there now, so just wait and see. But yeah, it was nice to have a bit of validation on that. But we'll see.
See how that goes.
See how it goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we've kind of covered mindfulness and yoga. It's not, you know, there are plenty of places that provide resource and links and in-depth details into the history of these kind of things. And as much as we'd like to, that's not really what the podcast is for.
Mm.
It's more for us to really draw on our own and the experiences and the experiences of other people from using these things. So what we'll do is we'll provide links to, obviously, that mindfulness meditation thing that I did. I'll tag that on at the end. I might actually put it on as a download so you can choose whether or not you want to listen to it. But I'll link to Shamash Aladina. Shamash Aladina, again, he's also got the museumofhappiness.org, which is a charity that he's started, which based down in London, which is a wonderful resource. And then, obviously, there's Headspace and John Kabat-Zinn. We'll put some links to those things as well. And to Yoga Life Manchester as well, we'll put down to that, for that too.
Let's Meditate, which is the one that I referred to, with that's got the different...
I'm thinking of starting, because we've put loads and loads of links up. What I'm thinking of doing is to make it easier for people to access the links on all the different social media platforms, because things like Instagram, you can only put a couple of links up, and Facebook you can, and then on the website there's stuff as well. What I'm thinking of doing is setting up a a links page or a links drive on the website, so that when we mention anything, it will always be in there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be working on that over the next couple of weeks, just to aggregate everything. If you think of anything that you want to put up there, please do let us know. But as ever, the contact details for getting in touch with us is podcast@thinkinghabits.co.uk. We're Thinking Habits on Twitter and on Instagram, and it's Thinking Habits Podcast on Facebook. So we'll sign off for today. In the meantime, keep talking, and if you need to talk, you know where we are.
Bye.
Bye.